Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Sunday's UFC Fight Night 88 event, which takes place in Las Vegas, Nevada. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, our premium package bets for UFC 198 went 1-1 to profit 0.53 units overall. We won our play on Renato Moicano, but lost our bet on Rob Font. Our free bet, which was a prop on Damian Maia by submission, also profited 1.55 units. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 88 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Sunday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a heavyweight contest between Chris De La Roca, who is 4-1, and Adam Milstead, who is 7-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Milstead -245, the comeback on De La Roca +175. Looking over at our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu, it is currently Milstead -255, the comeback on De La Roca is at +215. So line margins kind of tighten up a bit and a little bit more parlay action coming in Milstead's way. Not really that surprised. I mean, this is an interesting matchup because both these guys are definitely athletic heavyweights, powerful heavyweights as well. A lot of similarities, but again, there's some differences in their games. I'll start off with Milstead first since he's making his UFC debut officially. He does train with current heavyweight champion Stipe Miocic, so he's got that going for him, some momentum in the camp. They have trained together off and on for a little while now, so he's going to have the confidence of knowing he trains with the best in the world right now in heavyweight, so this should be kind of a step down for him. But he is making his UFC debut, and there's a lot of pressure that goes along with that. But getting into his background a little bit, he does have a wrestling background, and again, I mentioned he's a really good athlete to go along with it. He's an aggressive striker, heavy-handed, powerful. His boxing is actually pretty solid. I like his dirty boxing and his clinch game, I think, the best out of everything. He does have some speed and accuracy to go along with it. And he's also capable of hitting some takedowns, and he's got decent takedown defense. So he does have some grappling skill and even some submission skill, but he is more known for his knockout power and his aggressiveness on the feet for sure. On top, if he does get the fight to the ground, obviously he can do some damage with his ground and pound because he's that type of fighter as well. So Milstead is definitely a dangerous heavyweight that's going to come and bring it for his debut. Now, De La Roca, on the other hand, a powerful heavyweight, but he is more of a grappling-based fighter. And it's proven, I mean, in his UFC debut, there was some expectations with him as well. A lot of people were thinking he's going to do pretty good. He ended up getting knocked out by Omelichuk, so that kind of set him back a little bit. But he is a very hittable fighter. That's his problem on the feet. He does dish out some punishment. And he does have some power, even though he's a grappler on the feet. So you got to be cautious with a guy like De La Roca because he can end it with one punch as well. But again, more so than not, he likes to take the fight to the floor and work his submission game more than anything else. It's going to be difficult, I think, here for De La Roca against Milstead because Milstead does have enough wrestling to probably stuff some of those takedown attempts from De La Roca. And then on the feet, Milstead is going to have the speed and the power to probably do a little bit of damage as well. So it is a heavyweight fight. These guys are going to be throwing blows and they're going to be exchanged. So any one of these guys could make a mistake and get clipped and get knocked out. But I realistically think it's going to be Milstead knocking out De La Roca, and he's going to probably win this fight and have a successful UFC debut. So I am going to go with the debuting Milstead to win this fight and by knockout.
Milstead is definitely a bit undersized for the heavyweight division. He's fought at light heavyweight before. He's going to be giving up about 2 or 3 inches in height. He's going to be giving up about 3 inches at least in reach. But that being said, what he lacks in size, he makes up for in speed and athleticism. He does not have the typical build of most heavyweights coming in at about 225 pounds or so. I mean, he is ripped. He is athletic. He is quick. And that's what's going to help him against some of these slower, lumbering heavyweights like Chris De La Roca. De La Roca looked slow in his UFC debut against Daniel Omelinchuk, and who is also a bit of an undersized heavyweight, although he's packs on a little bit more weight to his frame to make up for it. Omielinchuk was able to get inside on De La Roca and just crack him with big punches and even a kick to the face. So I really do think that the speed advantage and quickness that Milstead will have here is going to be a huge benefit, as long as he can stay out of danger in terms of De La Roca closing the distance on him. Because Milstead's biggest weakness is the fact that we haven't seen much out of him on the ground in regards to defense, in regards to getting up from takedowns. He hasn't really faced any strong grapplers yet. A lot of his fights have just been slugfests on the feet, and he has been able to come out ahead on those. I mean, he hits very hard. He's quick. He's not the most technical guy, but I mean, he can brawl and he's solid on the inside. So I think what's going to happen here is Milstead is going to try to get into the phone booth without getting close enough for De La Roca to really grab him and just start blasting him. Milstead definitely has the power to hurt De La Roca. He hits just as hard as Omielinchuk, if not harder. And while he's not crazy technical, he is definitely still a very raw fighter. De La Roca does not impress me at all. Milstead's rawness should not be too much of an issue as long as he can avoid getting in De La Roca's clutches. So I expect Adam Milstead, even though he's a bit small for the heavyweight division, I think that speed and quickness is going to pay off here, and he's going to get inside, land some big shots, and then get out of the way before eventually landing enough that that De La Roca goes down for good. So my pick is going to be Adam Milstead to have a successful UFC debut. Now headlining the UFC Fight Pass prelims is a bantamweight contest between Aljamain Sterling, who is 12-0, and Brian Caraway, who is 20-8. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Sterling -405, the comeback on Caraway +285. This was broken on the Anik Florian podcast, so credit to those guys. I appreciate those guys breaking this line for us officially. And right now at fivedimes.eu, it's currently Sterling -425, the comeback on Caraway is +340. So a little bit more action coming in Sterling's way. Not really that surprised either. Obviously, Sterling is the more popular fighter of the two. Caraway deserves some respect, and he's getting a little bit more respect, especially from the bettors as of late. But typically, Caraway is one of those guys, you either love him or hate him as a fan, and a lot of those fans out there seem to hate Caraway a little bit. I mean, I know that's pretty harsh, but I'm sure most of you guys understand where I'm coming from. And it's probably not really justified either, because I think Caraway has put the work in, and he's became really quite a contender. I mean, you really got to respect what his work ethic and what he's been able to accomplish and get himself in the mix at 135 in the bantamweight division for even a possible title shot one day. But it starts with this fight here for Caraway against Sterling, and it is a tough matchup for sure. Sterling is one of those guys, a ton of hype since his UFC debut. He's got the total package. He only seems to be getting better fight by fight. I mean, honestly, I've always been fond of Sterling's skill set. I think he's really good. He's a capable fighter and capable of making a run, possibly to a title one day as well. But I thought he was probably going to struggle in a couple matchups that he had recently, and he came through with flying colors. I mean, Eduardo, that was a very impressive win for him. And then even Mizugaki, I mean, not many people were able to do what he did and submit him like he did. So Sterling is definitely getting more confidence fight by fight. I wish he was fighting a little bit more frequently. Hopefully we see that from this point on. He just gets steady fights, and I know that he had some issues with his contract or whatever. He was kind of unhappy there for a few minutes with the UFC, but finally he's getting back into gear, and again, he's getting better. He's getting more confidence on his side, and this matchup with Caraway is a very winnable matchup for Sterling. I think these guys are going to stand and bang a little bit. Both these guys like to take the fight to the floor, and both these guys have a great submission game to go along with it. So this is an intriguing fight because I think Caraway has definitely been improving his stand-up game. That's where he was lacking the most. He's always been really good on the ground, underrated wrestling, but he's also actually developing and getting a little bit more powerful, a little bit more confident in his stand-up game, and it's been effective. Even in this fight against Weiland, for example, I mean, a lot of people thought he was going to get severely outstruck there, and he was fine. And then against the Sun Tzu, that was a pretty competitive fight as well. He lost a close decision, but I mean, he was right in there with him. So I think Caraway is going to give Sterling a very tough test as well. And I think Sterling has to be very cautious, because if Caraway gets his back at any point in his fight, he could definitely end it. I mean, that's what kind of skill Caraway has on the ground. But that being said, defensively, Caraway, I do have some concerns. I mean, he's been subbed a couple times throughout his career. So offensively on the ground, I mean, he's a sub whiz, but at the same time, defensively, there are some flaws and does tend to make some mistakes. Now, we haven't seen him as of late from Caraway. And again, he's getting more confidence as well. And I think he believes he could seriously win this fight against Sterling. So he's going to show up. He's going to be game, and this should be fireworks here. It is a very intriguing matchup. I do think, as a betting perspective, it is a dog or pass situation. It's very hard to lay 4-1 over a guy like Caraway right now, or beyond 4-1, I should say, at the moment, because of the skill set Caraway has and how I think he's flying under the radar a little bit. But as far as the pure pick goes, of course, you got to give the edge to Sterling. I think Sterling will have a little bit more success on the feet. I think Sterling could probably out-wrestle Caraway a little bit and probably win the ground battle slightly as well. So everywhere the fight takes place, I do give a slight edge to Sterling, but a slight edge. And I think the number is a tad bit high. And I think, again, Caraway is going to make it a fight. So I am going to pick Sterling to win this fight, but it's definitely a dog or pass situation, in my opinion, at least.
Both of these guys are very competitive in regards to their primary skill set. Both Sterling and Caraway are excellent wrestlers with top-notch submission games. And both have picked up some serious submission victories inside the octagon so far. The biggest difference between them right now to me is age. Sterling, you know, being the undefeated, youthful, potential future of the bantamweight division at 26 years old is a big plus for him compared to Caraway, who's, you know, 31. Now, the other main factor is the fact that Sterling is a bit more athletic, and I do think that he is the better striker of the two, although he's not a world beater on the feet. He's just more effective there because his opponents are concerned about the takedowns and the submissions. So he's able to take advantage of situations. Now, I don't know if Brian Caraway is going to be too concerned about going to the ground here, because that is, you know, his world. So I think these guys are going to be very evenly matched when this fight hits the canvas. I think there's going to be some fun scrambles along the way. But the biggest difference between them is the fact that Sterling is so athletic, and he can be very unique. I mean, he's picked up some pretty impressive and strange submissions along the way, especially the one against Takeya Mitsugaki. I mean, that kind of came out of nowhere from a strange position. And, you know, very, very impressive, especially considering Mitsugaki is one of the best bantamweights on the roster and most experienced. Now, Caraway, you know, do not sleep on his ground game. I mean, you know, he has gone in there against some really impressive fighters, and not just one, but picked up the submission. I mean, Eric Perez was, you know, had a rocket strapped to him heading up to the top of the bantamweight division, and Caraway humbled him on the ground. Obviously, the Eddie Wineland performance was even crazier, because Caraway actually held his own on the feet and didn't even get a takedown. It was kind of crazy. Yeah. Wineland just could not act in that fight. So, you know, Caraway's stand-up, while I don't think it's quite as good as Sterling's, you can't sleep on that either. He is actually a potential live dog here because of how much love there is for Sterling. I mean, being ranked number 4 in the bantamweight division, he's earned it, but Caraway is going to be competitive in this fight. That being said, I do think that Sterling does have a couple of those slight edges. I think this fight's going to be a lot closer than the betting odds indicate, but I do think Sterling does have a couple of those small intangibles with the youth, with the athleticism, and I think a little bit of the originality that will help put him over the top. So my pick is Sterling, but I'm definitely exercising caution here. Now, kicking off the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have a lightweight contest between Eric Koch, who is 14-4, and Shane Campbell, who is 12-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Koch -125, the comeback on Campbell, -115. So -125, -115. The current line over 5dimes.eu is currently Campbell minus 165. The comeback on Coke is plus 145. So it opened virtually a pick 'em, and the action started coming in towards Campbell, and it actually increased to close to 2-1, if not over at one point. Then it's coming back down. Coke is receiving some action as of late, and the line's kind of settling back down a little bit closer to the opener. But still, regardless, I am disappointed with all you guys that came in and hopped on Campbell early on, because I do think it's the right side, and mainly because Coke has been out for so long again. I mean, he's been out since May 2014, since his knockout loss to Cruikshank. But before that, if you really look at his career, I mean, since that Brookins fight, which was, I believe, in 2011, I mean, he's been riddled with injuries, and he hasn't performed quite the same. So to me, there's a lot of factors here with Coke that I'm just not that confident. I know he's a popular fighter. I know he's an amazing talent. As far as skill set goes, there's no doubt in my mind that Coke is the better overall fighter. I mean, on the feet, the guy has skill. He's technical. He's got power. He's got the ability to finish on the ground. The guy is slick. He's worked on his wrestling, but not just that. His jiu-jitsu has always been on point. He's capable of finishing fights on the ground. I mean, the guy is just a smooth mixed martial artist. There's no doubt about that. And also, I mean, with his training camp, he works with a great camp in Rufus. And of course, we know he's been training with Pettis for a long time. A lot of great things about Coke, but the problem is I'm not sure exactly what happened or what went wrong, but it seems like he's just been, or again, riddled with injuries, and it's really had a negative impact on his career. He is taking this fight against Campbell, and it's not an easy fight because Campbell is one of these guys. If you've been getting knocked out, and all of a sudden your chin looks suspect and you've been getting caught, Campbell's probably not the type of person you want to get in there with. I know Campbell is taking this fight on short notice. He's coming in, stepping in for Proctor. So to me, this is actually almost a more dangerous fight for Coke than Proctor would have been, obviously, with Campbell being his opponent now. So I don't think it's going to go too well for him, because I think even if he's going to have some success early on, Campbell's really stepped up his game. He's getting a little bit more experience and confidence in the UFC. He's always been a devastating striker with his Muay Thai skill. He's developing his wrestling a little bit better. He's hard to take down, hard to control. He's also has a little bit of sub skill. I mean, it doesn't match up with Coke in this fight, but still, Campbell's a very dangerous and effective fighter. So if this fight hits the ground, I mean, I think Campbell could probably get top position and avoid the sub and grind out a decision type of win. If this fight stays on the feet, I think Campbell will win the exchanges and probably has a shot to knock Coke out as well. So just, I guess it's just not that confidence in Coke right now. And that's why I'm going to lean towards Campbell, and I am going to pick him to win this fight. I'd be surprised, and I kind of want to be wrong here. I want to see Coke step back in here and maybe take and absorb some punishment and take it and start looking like he once did, because he was such a great fighter. So I'm hoping that all the negative years he's had the last few years here for Coke, all the flaws and all the injuries and everything that's went wrong with him, hopefully he gets over that and he looks back to form and he puts on a great show against Campbell, because he has the ability to win this fight. I just don't think he's going to get it done, at least not at this time. So I'm going to pick Campbell. That's why I'm disappointed. All of you guys that came in early on, I think were smart and you were going on the right side, especially at minus 115. So good take on that line. And there's, you know, as far as a bet goes, there still could be some value in Campbell. It's getting a little bit more risky, of course, laying the juice against a talented fighter like Coke. But again, we just don't know what we're getting with Coke at this point. So I'm going to pick Campbell to win, and I think he probably finishes Coke along the way. So that's my pick.
The performance that really put Coke on the map in terms of potential title contention in the featherweight division was the win over Rafael Assunção. I mean, and Assunção has been on a complete roll ever since, but that was the one. I mean, a first round knockout over a guy that is a current top five bantamweight. Granted, Assunção dropped down. Now Coke has since moved up, so maybe that factored in, but ever since then, ever since the fight after his UFC debut, he has not looked good. I mean, granted, he has faced some very tough fighters. Ricardo Lamas, Dustin Poirier, you know, kind of made mincemeat out of him in those two fights, and he decided to move up a weight class. But the problem with Coke is his durability is a major concern. I mean, he got dropped multiple times against Poirier. He got, blasted from ground and pound TKO, from Lamas, and the Cruikshank fight, he just ate a big kick and never recovered. So, you know, three of his last four losses, he took a lot of punishment. Now, he has not fought in 2 years. So that is a major concern and a major red flag heading into this fight. A lot of fighters just take a little bit of time to get used to competing again, and he could definitely be rusty when he steps in there. Now, another thing to keep an eye on is, even though Shane Campbell is taking this fight on short notice, he has had plenty of time to prepare, I think. And he has fought short notice before, and he has been competitive in every fight he's had. So Campbell's going to come in here and give Coke everything he's got. Campbell is a little bit longer than Coke. He is the type of fighter that has a solid Muay Thai game, and I think he could potentially give Coke fits if Coke is unwilling to really pull the trigger. Neither of these guys have a great chin, and while Coke does have an underrated ground game, it's primarily focused on him being on bottom, mainly guard play. You don't see a lot of instances in Coke's MMA career where he was in a advantageous position other than after hurting someone on the feet. So if anything happens here on the ground, it might be Campbell picking up some takedowns, unless Coke has really been improving that ground game during this 2-year hiatus from injuries. So I agree with Nick here. I think Campbell is the fresher guy. He's been the much more active guy. His entire UFC career has taken place since while Coke's been hurt. So I do think that Shane Campbell can come in here, and if they have a brawl on the feet, I think Campbell can hold his own, potentially win it. And if it goes to the ground, I think Campbell could get the advantageous position. Even though he's not traditionally a great ground grappler, he has shown improvements there, and that could be enough to pick up a potential decision victory on the ground. So I think Eric Coke could definitely be defeated here as well. So my pick is going to be Shane Campbell. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Jake Collier, who is 9-2, taking on Alberto Uda, who is 9-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA Oddsmakers perspective on this one?
I put Uda -150, the comeback on Collier +110. Right now it is actually at 5 dimes. Uda -125, the comeback on Collier is +105. So 5 cent drop on the dog. Line margins have tightened up a little bit. There has been two-way action on this fight, because early on it was Uda. Now it's coming back in on Collier as well. This is a tough fight because, I mean, if you look at it, Collier's been a little bit disappointing. I mean, the guy has a skill set, has the tools, has the frame to be very successful at middleweight, but he is coming off a TKO loss to Dong Yang. I mean, a fight that realistically a lot of people thought he should have won. And he hasn't really lived up to expectations thus far. I mean, Collier, again, I think he's a capable fighter as far as getting the fight to the floor. He's got good wrestling. He's got good size. He's got good stand-up skill. He could be very effective with it as well. It's just his cardio has always been a question mark, in my opinion, because he does tend to slow down as the fight goes on. And then his chin is a little bit suspect as well. And he's fighting a guy in Uda that's making his UFC debut, but at the same time, he actually has, I believe, a 6-week notice for this fight to prepare. So he is a short notice replacement, but he's got almost a full camp in here. And for outside of the UFC, considering most Brazilian resumes aren't really that strong when they enter their UFC debuts, his is actually okay. I mean, he's got some quality wins mixed in with some not so great wins as well. But for, again, more of the regional circuit or more of the Brazilian scene over there, Uda's actually impressive to look at. And if you watch his footage, he is actually even more impressive. He's a Muay Thai stylist with more of a grinding style to his game, though, and because he does look for takedowns, does look to grind people out. He does work inside a lot. I mean, that's where he excels at the most as well. His hands and kicks are okay from distance, but again, I think he's more effective from inside and from the clinch. He's got a great Thai plum. I mean, vicious knee attack. He can definitely end fights that way. And he does look for takedowns often, and he's a very capable grappler, and he loves to stay busy. If you put Uda on his back, this is one thing I also like, he's not one of those guys that's just going to accept the position. He starts working, he tries to look for subs, he scrambles out, looks for reversals. Uda's a pretty talented fighter all around. So even though he's more of a Muay Thai stylist, I think he's a complete mixed martial artist, honestly. And I think Collier's going to have a lot of problems here. Again, I think Collier's going to be competitive. Collier might be start off winning this fight, actually controlling Uda a little bit. I think Collier's going to be a little bit stronger in this spot, and he could be effective early on. But as the fight progresses, I think Uda's going to probably take over. And I think Uda's probably going to end up finding a TKO type of stoppage against Collier as the fight goes on. So I just, you know, it's the confidence level of Collier that I don't have, because again, he hasn't lived up to expectations thus far. And I think Uda's coming in here under the radar a little bit. And I think he's going to probably find his way to a victory in his UFC debut, even if it is short notice or not. And it's unfortunate for Collier, because again, I think the guy has potential and he's got the skill set to do good. It's just, I'm not sure he's going to actually show it and be successful in the UFC. So tough fight. Realistically, could go either way, but I do lean towards Uda. I think he's going to get the job done and probably finish Collier along the way.
Collier's definitely had a rough go of it so far in his UFC career. I mean, first fight against Vitor Miranda, he was winning it, gets knocked out right at the end of the first round out of nowhere. Second fight, you know, just absolutely had to grind it out. It was a very competitive bout against Abreu that he ended up picking up a split decision. And then in his most recent performance, did not go well at all, ended up getting knocked out in the second round by Dong Yang. So I do think his chin is a huge question mark at this point, and that is terrifying considering he is facing a ferocious finisher with excellent striking in Alberto Uda. Uda has been able to rack up quality finishes against quality opposition as well, picking up victories over two former UFC fighters in Brazil. So he is not fighting scrubs. He is going out there and taking care of business against decent competition. Now, Collier, I've heard some good things about this training camp. He's going to come into this fight extremely prepared, in great shape. But, I mean, you cannot train your chin. And the fact that he has been hurt badly in two of his three UFC fights to the point where he got finished is a huge, huge concern considering he is facing a very powerful, dangerous striker. If Collier has a chance in this fight, I think it's going to be if he can utilize some of his wrestling. He's not a great ground fighter, but if he does have above average wrestling and if he can get on top of Uda, he can drop some ground and pound and either potentially pick up a TKO or grind this out. The main problem, though, is Collier's conditioning. He does slow down. Like, the reason he won against Abreu is because Abreu's conditioning was poor as well, and he was able to just barely do enough to convince two judges to award him the decision. I don't think he'll have that amount of leeway against Uda. If he makes any mistakes on the feet, if he leaves this fight standing too long, I think Uda is going to crack him and he is going to be in big, big trouble. I mean, Dong Yang is not exactly known for his speed and quickness, and Collier just ate one against him and he went down. So it could only take one good shot from Uda and Collier goes down. So I think that just factors into my choice for Uda picking up the win, probably my knockout at some point. So my pick is going to be Alberto Uda. Now dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Abel Trujillo, who is 14-6 with one no contest, taking on Jordan Rinaldi, who is 12-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I put Trujillo -305, the comeback on Rinaldi, +225. Right now it is actually Trujillo -320, the comeback on Rinaldi is +260. So a little bit more parlay action coming in Trujillo's way. Line seems to be solid. I mean, I'm sure we'll see a little bit of an increase. I think we'll see more parlay action coming Trujillo's way. But at the same time, we could see a little bit of a drop if some bigger action when the limits get to the max setting on fight day come in, maybe possibly on the dog, because they think there is some value there. And there might be. I mean, this might be a dog or pass situation. But the way these guys match up, I think it's a tough fight for Rinaldi, honestly. I mean, Trujillo, if you look at him recently, he's been a beast. I mean, there's no question about it. That's how he fights. I mean, he's a powerful, brawling type of stylist for sure. He's got some wrestling. He's got some sub skill to go along with it. Obviously, if you look at his last fight against Sims, that was pretty impressive. I was honestly, very, very surprised he ended up beating Sims by that choke. So it was impressive, and I think he's getting better and better. And if you look overall, I mean, except the loss to Ferguson, I mean, he's looked very good. He's fought quality competition, Trujillo has, and he's come through. Again, I mean, you can look back at the Khabib fight as well, but I'm saying as of late, the last few fights, I mean, he's fought some decent competition and he's he's been on it. He's been one of those fighters that typically can knock out their opponents. He has so much power and he has so much aggressiveness that their opponents, his opponents really can't take it. Rinaldi, he's a game fighter. He's a vet, of course. I'm glad to see him make his UFC debut. I think the guy deserves it. Now, he has been floating around from featherweight to lightweight a little bit. So I think a better weight class for Rinaldi is honestly 145. And this is a tough matchup for him because Rinaldi has some pretty good stand-up. I mean, he's a very technical fighter. It has a little bit of power on the feet as well. He's just not known for his knockout skill, though. And then, of course, what he excels at is his wrestling game and his ground game. I think that's where he does his best work. And I think it's going to be hard for him to get Trujillo on the ground here and try to submit Trujillo as well. So I think what happens here is Trujillo is able to keep the fight upright. And on the feet, I think Trujillo probably does punish Rinaldi along the way. Maybe not early on, but as the fight progresses a little bit, I think Trujillo finds a spot and probably catches him and possibly puts Rinaldi out. So tough fight either way. I think that if Trujillo makes a mistake, it wouldn't surprise me at all if Rinaldi catches him, possibly submits him. Along the way, Rinaldi is probably getting a little bit too much disrespect right now. But at the same time, this really is a fight Trujillo should win because I think he just outmatches Rinaldi at this point. Again, he should be able to keep it upright and land some punishment. So I'm going to pick Trujillo to probably knock Rinaldi out before it hits the scorecards.
This fight will only be competitive if Trujillo allows Rinaldi to get his game plan going, because Rinaldi is all about closing the distance, grinding, getting takedowns, working ground and pound, potentially looking for submissions. It's just everything is about getting his hands on his opponents and getting them on their backs and him getting top position. If that does not happen, he can get himself in some trouble. Now, he has picked up 5 wins in a row to earn this opportunity in the UFC. But before that, he was getting knocked out in RFA by James Muntasri. So he is a bit of a fish out of the water on the feet. He does not have a particularly good chin, and he's not a finisher, really. He's more of a grinder. He wears you down. He makes you want to quit in terms of repeated takedowns, getting that top position, taking you out of your element. And if he's able to do that, which it's very possible because Trujillo does not have very good takedown defense, he could be effective here. He could play spoiler. That being said, Trujillo did show in his last fight he has a bit of defensive ground game where he pulled off a submission after getting taken down. But I do think Rinaldi would probably be able to avoid that situation. I'm sure everyone tries to go for a guillotine when he gets takedowns on them. So the most effective defense against Rinaldi for Trujillo would be to stuff a takedown, work that wrestling in reverse, and just start pummeling him on the feet. Trujillo does have insane power. I mean, there are not many people that can put Jamie Varner's lights out with one punch. And Trujillo definitely is capable of finishing any fighter on the feet. But that being said, multiple times in his UFC career, he has been put on his back. I mean, you look the Gleison Tibau fight, which has since been overturned, but immediately taken down, immediately put in a compromising position on the ground. You look at the Khabib fight. Granted, Khabib's one of the best in the world, but Khabib was able to take him down and set a UFC record for takedowns in a fight. And then even in his last fight against Tony Sims, he survived from fending off a takedown from Tony Sims in about that, you know, he was losing the first round. I do have a serious concern for his takedown defense in this fight because that is all Jordan Rinaldi is going to look for. Now, hopefully, because Rinaldi is a bit more one-dimensional, Trujillo will be able to keep his hands low, not really worry about the stand-up much, and be able to sprawl and brawl a little bit. And if he's able to get that going, he's going to win by knockout easily. But if he's not, then Rinaldi could definitely pick up enough takedowns and get top position long enough to win a decision here. I'm not wholly convinced that Rinaldi can get a stoppage if he gets repeated takedowns, but he can be annoying enough and can control this fight enough to play a spoiler in terms of decision. But overall, I do think the fact that Rinaldi can't finish this fight does make it a lot more dangerous for him. He cannot get clipped even one time, or I think Trujillo will be able to put him away. So I think at some point, in this 15 minutes of combat, Trujillo will land that big shot and Rinaldi will go down. So my pick is going to be Abel Trujillo. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have a women's bantamweight contest between former title challenger Sarah McMahon, who is 8-3, and Jessica Evil Eye, who is 11-4 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put McMahon -175, the comeback on Eye +135. Right now it is -160 for McMahon. The comeback on Eye is +140. So line margins have tightened up. And there is two-way action on this fight as well. Some early support coming in on Jessica Eye. And now it looks like McMahon is getting some love back as well. So this is a tough fight because it's an old throwback fight. You have your wrestler versus your striker. And that's exactly what this matchup is. Now, both ladies have evolved their game a little bit and they have a little bit of everything, but that is exactly what McMahon wants to do here. She wants to get the fight to the floor. She wants to grind Jessica Eye out, maybe look for a finish on the ground as well, but basically grind her out and try to steal a decision here against Eye. Eye obviously wants to keep this fight upright, utilize her striking skill, which honestly, Jessica Eye is one of the best bantamweight strikers in the UFC for sure. I mean, she's got speed, she's got accuracy, she's got good footwork. I know it hasn't worked out that well for her as of late, but I do believe that she is one of the better strikers in the weight class. And I think against McMahon here, she's going to have a lot of success if the fight stays on the feet. Now, McMahon has a little bit of sneaky power, so Jessica has to be careful because she did get clipped, especially if you look back at the Misha Tate fight. She obviously is hittable a little bit, and with a powerful striker, even though Tate isn't really known for her striking, she is powerful, and she was able to clip Jessica and wobble her and put her down a little bit. So I am cautious a little bit for Jessica as far as that goes on the feet, even though she is going to outstrike McMahon. She has to be careful of a big bomb landing. But overall, McMahon is going to look to take this fight to the ground, get top position, and work ground and pound a little bit. Now, one thing is, McMahon at times tends to be a little bit inactive if she is on the ground. So if this fight is the type of fight that keeps on getting stand-ups, if McMahon does have success and get this fight to the floor, I think that obviously it's an edge for Jessica Eye as well, because the more the fight stays standing, the more Jessica Eye is going to be able to work her stand-up game. And again, she's got the speed advantage, she's got the accuracy. I think she can knock Sarah McMahon out, especially right now. I mean, McMahon is definitely on the decline of her career, unfortunately for her. I mean, I was expecting some really good things for McMahon in her UFC career, possibly even, I mean, a tough fight against Ronda Rousey. I know it didn't work out that way. I mean, Rousey just kind of ran through her, but still, overall, I thought she was going to be one to actually test Rousey at that point, but she hasn't lived up to expectations either. She's actually looked kind of bad as of late. Both these ladies are coming on a weird spot in their careers because, I mean, typically they're used to winning and they're on a little bit of a slump here, both ladies. So this could be a spot where loser leaves town. I mean, even though they're both very talented, especially for McMahon, because she has been really performing even worse. I think Jessica Eye's been in some very competitive fights and overall she's been performing pretty well. So I don't know if Jessica gets cut with a loss here, but I think McMahon possibly could if she does lose. So this is a very important fight for both ladies. And it's important to mention that both of these ladies also have experience training with each other. They've helped each other prepare for other fights before, so they know each other very well. Jessica does believe that she matches up well enough against McMahon that she's going to be able to keep this fight standing and she's going to have success on the feet. She's very confident coming into this fight. I believe that she can have that success as well, especially because she has been working here in Ohio with, you know, a wrestling team. I believe Cleveland State, to be exact. She's been drilling some wrestling and really working on that. And if you could tell from fight by fight, even before this matchup, she knows that some of these ladies are going to want to try to take her down. And her wrestling has improved fight by fight. So even though she has been put on her back and that's still an area that is her weakness, I think she's gradually improving that area. And McMahon early on, she might have a little bit of success, but as the fight goes on, I think it's going to get more difficult for her to get Jessica to the ground. So with all that being said, I do believe this is a very winnable fight for Jessica Eye. And I think along the way, even if she loses the first round, I think maybe in round two, round three, she starts picking up a little bit. And I think she actually finishes McMahon. So I'm going to pick Jessica Eye to probably knock out McMahon. I know the popular thought of this fight is probably hits the scorecards because both these ladies overall usually are pretty tough, hard to finish, and they're both more of decision machines than anything else. But I think that that's why you got to go against the grain a little bit. And I'm expecting kind of a finish in this fight. So I think Eye gets the job done here and probably finishes McMahon maybe late second round, early third.
I would definitely be on Team Jessica Eye 100% if I was convinced of her strategy heading into this fight or her fight IQ. But she did not showcase very good fight IQ in her last fight against Juliana Pena, a fighter that was not a very good striker and absolutely needed to get on the ground in top position to pick up the win. And what did Jessica do? She constantly, repeatedly closed the distance, which opened opportunities for Pena to get top position and beat her up from ground and pound. Now, I did manage to secure top position in one of the rounds to win one of the rounds, but she was winning every exchange on the feet. She is a very good, solid technical striker. She doesn't have a ton of pure punching power, but she gets the job done. And against most women in the bantamweight division, she can at least outpoint them and pick up a decision, if not accumulate enough damage to pick up a stoppage like she did in the Leslie Smith fight. So she just really has to focus on what makes her great. I think the problem was she got tired of getting out-wrestled and put on her back and put in bad situations on the ground, and she focused a lot on her wrestling. And some of those instincts just kicked in, and she wanted to close the distance from all the training with wrestling. And that just is not how she's supposed to utilize some of the wrestling training she's been working on. So against Sarah McMahon, I'm sure that Jessica has done a significant amount of preparation with some solid wrestlers for her training camp. I just really hope that doesn't kick in if she's ever put in a situation where, you know, she has closed the distance with some big punches and then she just allows McMahon to get a hold of her because she's too comfortable in that situation. That is my main concern, because I should be able to really touch up McMahon on the feet. McMahon is not very comfortable there. She did get dropped and hurt in her last fight against Amanda Nunes. So I do feel like I can do some serious damage in open space. She has a strong jab, a good follow-up straight right. It's just all about whether or not I is going to close the distance, because she just has a really bad tendency of doing that after striking exchanges. Kind of like boxers do. They just grab a hold of each other hoping to get a referee separation, because that's boxing rules, and she keeps forgetting that this is an MMA fight, and that doesn't stop the action and let you reset. So I really hope she can utilize footwork and get things going, because if this fight does hit the ground, even with Ai's improvement on the canvas with her wrestling, she is facing an Olympic silver medalist, and I expect Sarah McMahon to win those ground exchanges. So this will all, to me, come down to which version of Jessica Ai shows up and if she has a good fight IQ. And I'm not wholly convinced that she'll pull it off, but I'm on her side just barely enough that I think that Jessica Ai can go out there and take care of business on the feet. So my pick is going to be Jessica Ai, but extremely cautiously. This is like 51% to 49% type of situation. Now kicking off the main card on Fox Sports 1, we have a lightweight contest between Josh Berkman, who is 29-12 with one no contest, and Paul Felder, who is 11-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Helping Felder -215, the comeback on Berkman +165. Right now, it looks like Felder getting some love and getting some action. It's -320 for Felder right now. The comeback on Berkman is at +260 at 5dimes.eu. Across the board, around the sportsbook market via Don Best, it looks like there's some spots that still have under 3-1, 285s, 290s out there as well. So 3-1 is basically ballpark, and it looks like it'll settle around that spot as well. It's a tough fight because obviously, again, skill set for skill set, Berkman has been in the game for a long time. I think he went on a really impressive run before getting back into the UFC. And I thought he was honestly at one of those weird or strange spots in his career, though. Even though he was older, he was probably fighting the most intelligent and the best that he's ever fought in his career. But since he did come into the UFC, I mean, the matchups haven't been the greatest for him. I mean, he's faced some very difficult competition. I mean, I believe he made his UFC debut coming back in the mix against Hector Lombard, obviously, and that's a tough fight for anybody, especially making your reappearance in the UFC. And then, of course, he had to fight Kim after that. I mean, just fought tough competition across the board since he's entered, back in the mix with the UFC, and he just hasn't performed up to par. Now, of course, before his last fight, he did drop to 155. A lot of high expectations for him at 155. If he can make the weight cut decent, he cuts a lot of weight week of the fight. So I honestly wasn't sure how he was going to perform against KJ Nunes, and he went out there and he performed well. I mean, he took the weight cut well. It didn't seem to hinder him at all. His cardio looked to be okay as well, and he fought very smart. In fact, I was disappointed in KJ Nunes because KJ Nunes in that fight just didn't do much at all. I mean, he was very tentative and just let Berkman pretty much do what he wanted. So Berkman is going to have some confidence. He knows he can make that weight cut at 155. He looked good overall. So this might be a good weight class for Berkman to be in here in the latter part of his UFC career. Now, that being said, I mean, some of the issues that, or some of the success he was having against a guy like KJ Nunes, which was so tentative. Felder is not one of those guys. Felder is not a tentative fighter. Felder's going to bring it the entire fight. So Berkman has to be cautious. And of course, we all know Felder's more known for his striking. I mean, he does have some great striking power, some unorthodox striking angles and techniques that he uses and can be very effective with them as well. So Berkman has a pretty solid chin, but I think he's got to be careful here again with the weight cut, even though it went okay. Now he's facing a legit powerhouse at lightweight, and I think that Felder hits really hard. And if Berkman, if he's going to get knocked out, it's a guy like Felder that could probably do it here in this spot. But that being said, I think we're probably going to see a competitive fight. If it hits the scorecards, I think it's going to be a 29-28 type of decision. It's going to be probably a difficult fight for the judges to score because Felder does have some fight IQ problems in his own right at times. I mean, it just seems like we all expect a little bit more or a little bit better from him. He puts on some pretty good performances, but then again, that fight IQ steps in there and maybe he makes some mistakes along the way, or he could have a superior position. He doesn't go for it. Just he has his flaws definitely throughout the fight, but make no mistake. I think Felder does have the advantage against Berkman here because Berkman is going to probably want to try to look and take this fight to the floor. I think Felder's takedown defense is good enough to keep this fight upright. And if he does that, I think the Felder's probably going to outpoint Berkman and maybe even catch him and knock him out along the way. It's going to be a tough task to do, but I do lean a little bit more towards Felder. Now where the line is though, it's very dangerous. I mean, I think people are probably counting Berkman out too much, to be honest with you. So it's another dog or pass situation, especially at 3-1 for Felder right now. Again, I do think he probably gets the job done here. I think it's a difficult matchup for Berkman, but man, I mean, I wouldn't lay 3-1 against it. So be careful if you guys are out there thinking that this is an easy win for Felder and throwing him in parlays or whatnot. I think it is going to be a 29-28 type of fight, and we all know how bad the judges are out there. So if it does hit the scorecards, who knows what they're going to score it or how they're going to score it. So I do lean Felder, though. I think he should probably beat Berkman in this spot.
Berkman has definitely not had the best run in his return to the UFC. He was defeated in all of his welterweight bouts despite putting himself in a decent position in a couple of his fights, landing some big shots, but just wasn't quite able to get over that hump. The drop down to lightweight was successful briefly with that last performance against KJ Nunes, but I think he's going to be in a much tougher position here. What's helped Berkman along the way is he has power and he's able to go hard early and then hold on. And I don't know if the fact that he's powerful and will be able to go hard for those first two rounds before tailing off is going to be enough against somebody like Paul Felder, who is a solid overall technical fighter, can mix in some serious unorthodox attacks with some of his spinning attacks that have picked up knockouts already, and the fact that Felder is not as susceptible on the ground as he used to be. I mean, that last performance, he was down against the quicker Darren Cruikshank, and he was able to get the fight to the floor and pick up a submission. So I don't think that Berkman's ground game is going to be a huge advantage here. And on the feet, Felder is just about as long as Berkman. Their reaches are very similar. Felder's actually an inch taller and has a very slight leg reach as well. So I think Felder will be the more effective striker, and Josh Berkman is not invincible on the feet anymore either. He was knocked out by Patrick Cote, and while I don't know if Paul Felder has Patrick Cote power, you do lose a little bit of durability when you drop down a weight class because you are taking more liquid out of your system, and that can make your brain a little easier to rattle. So I do feel like Paul Felder could pick up a stoppage victory in this fight as well. And Felder really has not had any issues with conditioning, and that has been a major concern for Berkman. So overall, I do think that at some point in this fight, Felder will take over. He has the technique on the feet. He is the purer, more skilled fighter in the stand-up and more diverse striker. And his chin should hold up against Berkman, even though Berkman can crack. I expect Felder will get the edge in stand-up exchanges. So I'm going to side with Paul Felder here as well. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Jorge Masvidal, who is 29-10, taking on Lorenz Larkin, who is 16-5 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Masvidal, minus 125. The comeback on Larkin, minus 115. So virtually a pick 'em. And right now it's Larkin, minus 120. The comeback on Masvidal, even money. So virtually a pick 'em here, but just flip the other way. So this is a very tough fight, very close fight. And at the sports books early on, there was more action coming in Larkin's way. And now we're seeing more action coming back in on Masvidal. So this is a very tough fight because both these guys are very quality fighters all around. Both these guys like to stand and bang. Of course, Masvidal is the more well-rounded fighter of the two. He could beat you standing up. He could beat you on the ground. He's got some pretty slick sub to his game. Honestly, a lot of people don't expect Masvidal kind of hitting subs along the way, but he's got that kind of sneaky game as well. And then the wrestling aspect of it is also very impressive. I mean, he's got underrated wrestling. He's got good takedown defense to go along with it. So Masvidal is a very complete fighter. Now, at times on the feet, I think he does make some mistakes from time to time. I mean, he's not always as aggressive as he needs to be, and he does get tagged. He does get hit a little bit. He's been wobbled. He's pretty tough as far as chin goes overall. He's a hard guy to knock out. And if you do wobble him or drop him, he's the type of fighter that kind of instantly just rebounds or just kind of gets himself back together, and it's hard to stop him. So it doesn't take long for him to recover. And he's back in the fight, and you can't really even tell that he's been knocked out or knocked down, I should say, or even hurt. That's how good he recovers. So Masvidal is a pretty tough out for most people. He's the type of guy that's going to put that relentless pressure on you as well. And he can definitely edge a lot of fighters out, if not get the finish. So tough fight for Larkin, but I do believe that Larkin does have the edge on the feet, and Larkin's takedown defense overall has gotten to the point where he's a very difficult guy to take down. I know, again, he's had a problem in the past with some really legit wrestlers. I think Masvidal can probably try to sneak in a takedown or two. I think Larkin, if that happens, I think Larkin finds his way back up to the feet fairly quickly, but I think Masvidal will probably struggle even to get it to that point. So Larkin on the feet does have the edge. I mean, he's a little bit faster. He's a sniper in his own right. He's got very powerful, precise strikes. Of course, we all know in his last fight against Tumanov, that was a very close decision fight. He could have, I mean, if there was different judges sitting there, honestly, he could have probably won that fight. It was that close. And his leg kicks are just devastating. So Masvidal has to check some of those kicks. He's got to be prepared for that as well. But overall, I mean, if this is a stand-up affair, and it should be, Larkin should have the edge. My concern in this fight is really all depends on Masvidal's game plan. If he's able to kind of slow the pace of the fight down, push Larkin up against the cage, because Larkin does have a little bit of a tendency to get himself kind of controlled against the cage and settles instead of really working his way out and back into the center of the cage and working his space. A lot of times he just kind of sits there a little bit too long. Now he's getting better. I think he realizes that that's a mistake that he makes. And if the fights hit the scorecards, it kind of goes against him at times. So he's going to have to avoid the cage. He's going to have to keep his back off the cage wall, and he's going to have to try to center himself up and work his striking game, because he is one of the best strikers at 170. I mean, for crying out loud, back in the day, he did have a win. I mean, I know it's been said time and time again against Robbie Lawler. So that's how good this guy could be. And again, one of the best strikers in the UFC is Tumanov, and he was able to have a lot of success against one of the elite strikers in him. So this guy is right there as far as just quality striking, and he's going to outstrike most people. If he won't outpoint you, he'll probably knock you out. So Masvidal has to be careful here, and I think this is a very winnable fight for Larkin. Again, if he can kind of control where the fight takes place and he doesn't let himself get caught up against the cage. And I think he probably will do that. So this is an awesome fight. I'm glad the UFC put this together. Really flip a coin to see who wins this one. I mean, it all depends on what the judges like. It all depends on the game plans here. But I do think that if it stays standing, you got to give Larkin the slight edge. So I'm going to pick him to win. I think Larkin can win this fight.
While Jorge Masvidal is an extremely technical fighter and has picked up some quality wins throughout his mixed martial arts career, I just think he's outmatched here. Lorenz Larkin is just a very big, strong guy. Even though they're about the same size, Larkin has faced middleweights, he's faced light heavyweights, he's even faced heavyweights throughout his career. So Masvidal moving up from the lightweight division, this is just his third fight at welterweight in the UFC. And I think this might be the fight that makes Masvidal decide it might be worth cutting the extra weight and going back to lightweight. Larkin is just an extremely quick, active striker. And while at times both of these fighters are a little too unable to engage and have had fights taken from them because they were a little too focused on trying to find that perfect strike, it's been Masvidal who has been a bit too inactive more often. And we've seen it multiple times throughout his UFC career and even his MMA career overall, where perhaps the less technical but more voluminous striker was able to pick up a controversial win over Masvidal because Masvidal just was not engaging enough and was not landing enough, even if he was landing a high percentage of his strikes. I think he does need to open it up a little bit in terms of aggression if he really wants to start picking up some of those close fights. Now, Larkin has definitely amped up the aggression since dropping down to welterweight. I think part of his problem at middleweight was he was facing some big, strong guys, and he didn't want to open up because he could be susceptible to getting taken down or pressed into the fence. And now that he is at welterweight, that's not quite as big of a concern here. He's a little able to go for broke a little bit more, and he's picked up some serious knockouts already in his welterweight run. And that last fight against Albert Domenech, which was a pure stand-up fight, Larkin did some serious damage with those leg kicks. It just didn't accumulate quick enough, and he was only able to win the third round. That being said, Larkin is a serious striker. He has the speed, he has the power, and Masvidal is a bit more one-dimensional with his striking. He does have extremely technical boxing and counter-striking, and he can mix in some knees if his opponents are looking to change levels, but I think Larkin just keeps this fight at distance and is really able to get in, get out, land some big strikes, and potentially just outpoint Jorge Masvidal due to sheer volume and aggression. So I expect Larkin to do very well here. Both of these guys are a bit susceptible to getting hurt on the feet. Larkin has been knocked out a couple times in his MMA career, and while Masvidal has not, he has been dropped and rocked and hurt multiple times, especially in his run in the lightweight division. So I expect if Larkin can connect with something solid, Masvidal could go down as well. So overall, I do think this is Lorenz Larkin's fight to lose. I think Masvidal, even if it's super close, the decisions always tend to go against Masvidal in those type of fights. So I think a lot of the intangibles are with Lorenz Larkin, so I'm picking him to win. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Chris Camozzi, who is 23-10, taking on Vitor Miranda, who is 13-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Miranda -130, the comeback on Camozzi -110. Right now, there has been a significant change. Miranda is -200, the comeback on Camozzi is +170. It actually was creeping up a little bit beyond that as well, but now it's coming back down a little bit. So obviously, most of the bettors out there believe that Miranda is going to possibly knock Camozzi out or outpoint him to decision win here. That's why they're coming in that way. And Miranda is a very talented striker. I mean, very impressed with him. I mean, throughout his whole career, he's been under the radar, and especially since he's kind of come into his own with his UFC fights recently. I mean, he's looked great. He is a sniper. He's a very smart, intelligent striker, precise striker. I mean, everything you want to see. He's got the knockout ability. He's a tough out for most people. But the problem is here, I think a lot of people are miscounting a few flaws that he's got. And Camozzi, I think, is going to be a very challenging fight for him because Camozzi is obviously a savvy vet in his own right. He has the striking ability to do okay against most middleweights. I mean, obviously, if you have to compare the striking, Miranda has a striking edge in his fight. There's no question about that, but Camozzi is a very active striker. He brings it. I think Camozzi has the better wrestling here as well. A lot of people are probably going to underestimate his wrestling ability in this spot, but I think Camozzi is a smart enough fighter that he can probably slow the pace of this fight down, maybe push Miranda up against the fence here, grind him out a little bit as well, and then obviously in open space, even though it should favor Miranda a little bit, I think that Kamozi is going to have some success as well. So I think this is going to be a very, very competitive fight. So to me, it's more of a true pick-em type of fight with a slight edge towards Miranda. And again, all the bettors out there disagree and they're going his way. But I'm going to actually go the other way. I think Kamozi does have enough experience in him, and I think he is going to game plan this fight enough that he's not going to let himself get really beat up on the feet like everybody expects from Miranda. I think he's going to have a smart game plan. He's going to, again, kind of slow the pace down a little bit and try to grind Miranda out and have a little bit of success along the way, even on the feet. But danger fight, Kamozi has to definitely be cautious. But I think it's a winnable fight for him. So I am going to go against the grain here, and I'm going to pick Kamozi to win a very close competitive decision, a 29-28 type of decision. I do think it hits the scorecards more than likely. And I think if it does, Kamozi's probably going to get the win.
Both guys are active strikers. Both guys definitely will want to keep this on the feet, most likely. And I do think that either guy can win. I know Miranda's the favorite here, but Chris Kamozi looked really good in his last fight, picking up that super quick victory over Joe Riggs. But Vitor Miranda has definitely been a bit vulnerable throughout his UFC career, even though he is already picking up three victories in a row. And they're all by knockout. But I mean, you look at those performances, the win over Jake Collier, he was losing the first about 4 minutes and 45 seconds of the first round. And then just bam, out of nowhere, picks up a knockout. The Clint Hester fight was a bit more, one-sided. But again, the Guimaraes fight, Miranda was constantly fending off takedowns. He was being put in some precarious positions and then, bam, lands a knockout in the second round. So I do think that the advantage Kamozi has heading in is he is extremely durable. I can't even remember the last time he was ever even rocked in a fight. And Kamozi's most vulnerable to guys that want to wrestle, people that want to put him on his back, work for submissions, and that's not Vitor Miranda. This is going to be a stand-up fight. This is going to be a scrap. And Kamozi is, even though he's not the most accurate fighter, and Miranda definitely does have the technique on him, what Kamozi has going for him is a bit of youthful exuberance. I mean, you got to remember, Vitor Miranda is 37 years old, while Kamozi's just 29. And Kamozi does have a lot more UFC experience overall, and he does put some serious pressure on his opponents on the feet. I mean, he goes forward aggressively, tries to close the distance, and then just start out-voluming his opponents. Now, Miranda should be able to keep up with him on the feet and mix in some kicks. That's not exactly Kamozi's forte, but Kamozi's knees in the clinch were nasty in that last fight. He was able to really hurt Riggs on the inside. So if Kamozi's able to close the distance, this fight gets interesting in a hurry. I think Miranda does win in open space, but Kamozi is constantly putting pressure on opponents, and without fear of the ground game whatsoever, I think Kamozi can turn that aggression up a notch and really start pressuring Miranda, taking away some of his advantages with his strong kicking game. So I agree with Nick. I think this fight's going to be competitive. I think it's going to be extremely entertaining. But I do think Chris Kamozi, at least stylistically, matches up with Vitor Miranda very well and could definitely pull off this upset. So my pick is Chris Kamozi. Now dropping down to the welterweight division, we have Tarek Saffiedine, who is 16-4, taking on Rick Story, who is 18-8. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put this fight exactly a pick, minus 120 either way. And right now it is actually Story minus 125, the comeback on Saffiedine plus 105. But the line just recently flipped. It was actually Saffiedine that got the early action and it crept up a little bit his way. So I think pick's about right in this spot as well. I mean, stylistically, these guys do match up pretty interesting. I mean, we have the guy like Rick Story that I should say he's been out since his Gunnar Nelson win back in October 2014 with some injuries. So this is his first time back. So there is that caution kind of to be aware for this fight for sure. But at the same time, Saffiedine has had his share of injuries and he just hasn't, I think, looked the greatest as of late either. And of course, now we all know some of the rumors that were floating around. It seems to be, I guess it was his knee that was cut open, so it wasn't too bad, but there was all sorts of stuff circulating around, and it did cause some action to come back in on story. And I think that's partially why the line just recently flipped a little bit as well. But overall, I mean, from the beginning, I kind of like in favor story in this matchup, to be honest with you, because I do think that he's the type of fighter that, I mean, he puts that relentless pressure on fighters. Now, Saffiedine is a sniper. He's definitely technical in his skill set. He's got nasty leg kicks to go along with it, similar to some of the fights we've been talking about, but, and he's very intelligent. I mean, I think that Saffiedine's a great fighter. He's got good takedown defense, and his wrestling is underrated as well. So he really typically matches up great against wrestlers, but I think here with, from what we've seen recently with Saffiedine, I mean, again, I know that you got to give him a little bit of credit because Rory McDonald is one of the best welterweights in the UFC right now, but that was a very surprising knockout loss, in my opinion, to Rory. I was expecting Saffiedine's chin to just be a little bit better than that as well. And I don't know, to me, he just hasn't looked overly impressive. I mean, even right before, you know, that spot against Lim, even though he won that war, he started looking a little bit iffy in that fight. Lim did have his moments as well. But anyway, that's dating back a little bit of time now. And again, we're talking about the Saffiedine right now. And I think Story coming back, this is a good fight for him because he does put up on that kind of relentless pressure. I think he will try to, again, pin Saffiedine up against the cage, maybe look for some takedowns. I don't know if he's going to have a lot of success doing so, but Story's relentless pressure and power to go along with it, I wouldn't even be shocked if Story maybe clips Saffiedine along the way and rocks him and possibly just unloads on him and beats him by TKO stoppage. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked at all at this point. So I think this is Story's fight to win or lose because he, I mean, for crying out loud, we kind of all forget that this is the guy that really at one point was a serious title contender, and his win again over a guy like Gunnar Nelson, very impressive as well. He had a close fight with Gaslam, which we all know is one of the better fighters at welterweight as well. He's in the title mix. Of course, he has a win over former champion, Johnny Hendricks. So, I mean, Story is right there at the top of the food chain with the welterweights. I mean, his wrestling's on par. His aggressiveness is actually above and beyond most at welterweight as well. So stylistically, in most cases, he's the type of fighter you love to bet on because you know he's going to bring it. He's going to be the aggressor. He's going to control the tempo of the fight, and he's going to probably grind out a win. I think that's what he's probably going to do against Saffiedine here. Now, one thing that I am concerned about with Story is he has a tendency to block punches with his face. He has an awesome chin. We all know that too. I mean, he absorbs the punches really well, but after a while, I mean, how long can that really last? So I wish defensively Story was a little bit better because Saffiedine does have only one knockout on his resume, but I think that's really not as accurate. He's got a little bit more power than that indicates. And if Story's not careful, he could get clipped and caught. I mean, possibly finished that way. I don't think it happens, but I would prefer Story not to block punches with his face, put it that way. But overall, I do think this is a fight that Story can win, and I'm going to pick him to win. I think he grinds out probably a decision win over Saffiedine.
Definitely cannot sleep on Rick Story. He is a guy, I mean, as Nick mentioned, serious title contention during his six-fight win streak in the division. And, I mean, he was right on the cusp. And he has picked up some major quality victories through that run. I mean, he beat Johnny Hendricks, he beat Thiago Alves, he beat Gunnar Nelson most recently. The problem, of course, is ever since the Gunnar Nelson fight, he has not been able to stay healthy. This is his first fight since that victory. He did not fight in all of 2015. It's been over a year and a half since he last competed. That is the major cause for concern here. But I do think that he's facing somebody in Tarek Saffiedine that has also been out for a long time and only just recently returned with that win over Jake Ellenberger. Now, Saffiedine's style is all about footwork, creating space, and scoring points on the feet. He is not a powerhouse. I think Rick Story has not too much to fear in regards to what Saffiedine's going to be throwing at him, because Rick Story's game is all about forward pressure, getting his opponent in a bad position defensively, whether it's pressed against the fence, whether he can cut off the cage, and then he just starts working them over with combinations of hooks, and then he'll either clinch or work for a takedown. And it works extremely effectively against fighters that he can corner a little bit. Now, that's going to be difficult because Saffiedine's footwork is excellent, and Saffiedine has no conditioning problems. So Story is going to have to ramp up the aggression a little bit here. Sapodine also can chip away at those legs as Rick Story kind of stalks him in this fight. But I do not think Story has anything to fear in regards to Sapodine's power. So he might be a little bit more aggressive than usual here, because I think he's just going to try to walk him down. And if Sapodine wants to hit him, he's going to have to plant. And that's where Rick Story pounces in regards to pressing him against the fence and uglying this fight up a little bit, because that's how Rick Story wins against, superior strikers like Thiago Alves. He was able to get him on his back, get him against the fence, and win those first two rounds to pick up that decision. And you saw in the Gunnar Nelson fight, I mean, he just repeatedly pressured Nelson, took him out of his karate style a little bit, and then just beat him up. And that was the last time we saw him. I mean, that was about as good as Rick Story has ever looked as in his entire career. His conditioning issues of the past were resolved a little bit. I don't know if it's going to remain that way after such a long time away from the octagon, but if he can show up at that same level, and he has been training with some solid gyms during his time off, then I think that he can definitely pick up this win. Sapodine, while a very good technical striker, is just not the most effective striker in regards to damage. And yeah, he can pick his shots and outpoint opponents like Jake Ellenberger, who are not really going to go for it against him, but I think Rick Story will. And the pressure from Rick Story, I expect, will be the difference. I think Sapodine's going to spend a significant amount of this time with his back against the fence, and he's going to be very, very frustrated. So I expect Rick Story to just win this fight positionally. So my pick is going to be Rick Story. I think he walks through Sapodine's shots and just puts him on the defensive for three straight rounds, potentially picking up a stoppage along the way. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the featherweight division, we have Hanan Barrow, who is 35-3 with one no contest, taking on Jeremy Stephens, who is 24-12. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Open Brow, minus 265. The comeback on Stevens, plus 185. Yes, that was the official opener. Minus 265, plus 185, because this line has been out a long time, and it's really not that case right now. So that's why people might be a little surprised, because if you're looking at fivedimes.eu right now, it's Brow minus 190. The comeback on Stevens, plus 165. And it was as low, I believe, at one point, like at minus 165 for Brow. So action is starting to come back in on Brow, but all the early action was definitely on Stevens. I mean, really, a little bit surprising, because Brow's one of those guys, obviously, before his recent fights with TJ Dillashaw, he got all sorts of respect to the point where, I mean, even in that first Dillashaw fight, he got bet from 4-1 to 10-1, for crying out loud. So a little bit too much respect sometimes against for Brow. Now, he is moving up to 145, so he's no longer going to compete, it looks like, at least for now, at bantamweight. He's stepping up to featherweight. I think it's going to be a little bit better for him, because it looked like it was a pretty drastic cut for him to make, obviously, bantamweight. He had some issues there making weight as well. So this probably should be a little bit more of a comfortable division for him. But a guy that has currently been struggling with his striking defense, and honestly, I mean, he's been getting clipped and knocked out now twice, really, by TJ Dillashaw. I know he had that win over Mitch along the way, but he's fighting a guy that's all he does when he wins, basically. I mean, I know Stevens can win by decision, but I'm saying he's more known for his knockout power. So a guy stepping up that's been coming off of basically in between a fight that he won. I mean, he's suffered two knockout losses to the hands of TJ Dillashaw, facing another guy that hits very hard at Stevens. I'm not sure it's a great fight for him, but that being said, technical skill set wise, he is the better fighter. I mean, Barrow has underrated wrestling. He obviously has really good striking to go along with it as well. He's got a great submission game. I mean, he is a complete MMA fighter. I mean, a fantastic fighter. That's why he held the gold for so long at bantamweight. I mean, the guy is definitely a talented, special type of fighter. So Stevens is going to be in for a heck of a fight here. I think if Stevens does not land that knockout punch, he probably loses, and he might even get finished along the way himself. I know that Stevens' submission defense has improved. He's gotten better. His takedown defense has obviously always been pretty good, so it's not going to be easy for Brow to get him to the ground and submit him, but I think that is a path to victory for Brow as well. And then even on the feet, I wouldn't be surprised if Brow has a little bit of success against Stevens, but that's an area that, again, he has to be a lot more careful about, because Stevens can land that one punch that can end most people, or a kick, obviously, from Stevens as well, that can end your night. So I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Brow, because I do think he's the more complete fighter. I think if it hits the scorecards, I wouldn't be surprised to see Brow steal a decision. And I think if this fight ends inside, Brow does have more ways to finish this fight. So I'm going to lean towards him as well. But as far as a pure bet goes, I think the early action on Stevens, I mean, you guys that hopped in and got plus 185-ish around that, I think there was some value in Stevens at plus 185. So good take for those of you guys that came in early. And I think it still is probably a dog or pass situation. I wouldn't be confident unless I see Brow kind of have this fight and perform relatively well at 145 against a hard hitter like Stevens before I really regain my confidence in Brow. Even though he is a special elite fighter, I still want to see that. So for me, it's a dog or pass situation still. I wouldn't lay the juice on Brow. But that being said, I still think you have to give the slight edge to Brow, and I think he probably comes away with the win here, so I'm going to pick him to win.
These fighters have both been down on their luck recently, granted against some serious competition. I mean, Stevens lost to Charles Oliveira, Cub Swanson, and Max Holloway. They are all fighters in the top five or six overall in the featherweight division. And Brow lost to TJ Dillashaw twice, who is currently, you know, number two at bantamweight. So, it's nothing to be ashamed of, the people they're losing to, but they definitely need a drastic change if they want to, you know, become a player again. And for Brow, that change was moving up a weight class. The weight cut was just taking too much out of him, and he felt that he was sluggish in those Dillashaw fights, and he was, and that this could be a benefit for him. We'll see. I think he can pack on a little bit more muscle to his frame. And Jeremy Stevens is a guy that dropped down a weight class when things weren't going well for him at lightweight. So they're kind of colliding here after two completely different changes that they made. Now, Stevens is all power all the time. I mean, the guy has ferocious knockout ability. I mean, he put out the current champion at lightweight, Rafael Dos Anjos, with a just all-timer uppercut in the third round of their fight. So, I mean, he can put out anyone at any time, anywhere, if he can connect with that big shot. And Hanan Barão is susceptible to that. He was rocked in his fight against Michael McDonald, and then obviously he was put out in both of his losses to TJ Dillashaw. So, if Stevens connects with something really big, then Barão could be in major trouble. That being said, Hanan Barão is the more well-rounded fighter here. Barão's stand-up has definitely improved throughout his run in the bantamweight to rise to the top of that division, and his ground game was always his go-to. And Stevens has been a little bit susceptible on the ground, so if Barão can get on the canvas, he is absolutely exceptional at taking his opponents back, putting his opponents in precarious positions, gaining dominant positions, and working for submissions. On the feet, it's going to be another story. Barão is dangerous there. He has some power, but it's a lot more playing with fire if you're in a stand-up war with Jeremy Stevens. I think Barão will look a lot better if he can start mixing up his game a little bit more. He got a little too one-dimensional at bantamweight, and a very aggressive high-volume striker in TJ Dillashaw was just able to outpace him. So I think in this fight, if Barão's able to mix it up, then he could be in a good position. But Jeremy Stevens, you cannot sleep on him. I mean, fight-changing power at any moment. And it's not just his fists. I mean, he knocked out Honey Jason with the head kick as well. So Barão is going to have to be on his guard at all times. And if Stevens does land that big shot, Barão could be put out at any moment. So I'm very slightly leaning Hanan Barão. I think that he makes a positive debut in the featherweight division, but Jeremy Stevens could definitely be a live dog as well. So I'm picking Barão, but very cautiously. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a bantamweight contest between two undefeated fighters in Thomas Almeida, who is 21-0, and Cody Garbrandt, who is 8-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Almeida -260, the comeback on Garbrandt +180. And again, basically the same thing that I was thinking about the Brow fight. It's been out for a long time, this line. So it's had enough time where action did pile in on Garbrandt, and it's all the way down to Almeida -165 at the time of the recording right now. And there is some action coming back in. It looks like on Almeida across the board, looking at the Don Best screen, it looks like it's starting to kind of move its way back up a little bit. So I wouldn't be surprised if it closes maybe closer to 2-1, but this is another tough fight for sure, because you got both very hyped prospects, and the hype behind them is obviously real. I mean, it's, I guess you can go beyond the hype and say they are legit prospects. Both of them are young, 24 years old. Both these guys have really high expectations as well. And both of them have delivered thus far in their UFC careers. And both of them are fun fighters to watch because they're strikers. They want to end fights on the feet. They're exciting. I mean, well put together strikers as well. Accurate. They throw good combinations. They have that killer instinct. I mean, these guys are special strikers, especially for the bantamweight division. Two of the best you're going to see. It's surprising a little bit that UFC kind of matched them up at this point. You would figure they would probably continue to kind of match them up against maybe older veterans that are probably have one foot out the door type of thing to get their resumes a little bit more padded, but they put them right in to the fire against each other. And this is going to be an explosive type of matchup. I mean, both these guys offensively, again, very gifted, very talented, can end your night with one strike. But at the same time, defensively, both of them do have some problems. I think defensively, they can both definitely improve, especially Almeida. If you look at him, he just absorbs a little bit too much punishment. Now, he's shown a really good chin, and we were talking about quick recovery earlier in fights and earlier on the podcast with some fights as well. I think Almeida is another one of those guys that even though he's been clipped, he's been dropped, it looked like he was about to get finished. He just rebounded, recovered quickly. He's in great shape. He ends up recovering from those strikes and then just putting his opponents out most of the time. So, I mean, it's kind of sneaky with Almeida because, again, he's hittable. He obviously can absorb some punishment, but he can dish out way more than he absorbs as well. So Almeida is definitely a very dangerous fighter, but that defense does concern me a little bit. You could say a little bit of the same thing about Garbrandt. I think defensively, he's maybe not quite as bad as Almeida overall, but he still does get hit a little bit. And you would like to see his defense be a little bit tighter. And especially against a fighter like Almeida, he cannot afford to take too many, you know, punches or kicks or knees or anything like that, because obviously Almeida has enough knockout power and accuracy to knock Garbrandt out as well. So both these guys are going to have to be very careful defensively against each other, because obviously they both have to respect each other in some ways as well, and they both have capabilities to knock each other out. Now, overall, on the ground, I think both these guys have decent ground games as well. Underrated wrestling, to be exact. I think Garbrandt probably has the edge in the wrestling department a little bit over Almeida. Almeida, I think, has a pure BJJ edge over Garbrandt, though, a little bit as well. So both these guys should kind of neutralize each other out on the ground, and they both want to stand and bang. So I think that's what we're probably going to get. So somebody is more than likely going to sleep in this fight. It's a tough one. I got a lot of respect for Garbrandt. I think he is a very talented fighter. He has trained in the past with Alpha Male, but from what I'm hearing, he's kind of made a move to Greg Jackson's camp. I think that move is probably a good thing. Jackson's obviously is one of the best camps in the world right now. So a little bit of change of pace, I think, would only do Garbrandt some good. I think he's going to be even better at this point, and he's going to need it. They're going to have to game plan really well against Almeida here in this spot. So tough fight for both guys. I mean, realistically, it is another coin flip type of fight. So those people that came in on the plus money with Garbrandt early on as well, I could see it. There probably was and maybe still is some value on Garbrandt at the price. It's another dog or pass situation. Garbrandt could definitely land on Almeida and put him out, because Almeida, he absorbs that punishment, but Garbrandt is another level as far as striking goes, as far as power goes. And I don't know if he's going to be able to really take Garbrandt's punches like that, if he's going to be able to absorb them as well as he has in the past. But with all that being said, I still lean a little bit more towards Almeida in this fight. I think Almeida, man, I mean, he's just so vicious on the feet, so talented. I think he could land that flying knee or something crazy against Garbrandt. And I think he is going to be a tad bit longer. I believe he's going to have almost 6 inches of pure reach. These guys are going to be both about the same height, but pure reach, Almeida has that edge. And I think he's going to be landing a little bit more effectively overall. And it doesn't take much. So it's a toss-up fight, pretty much the same scenario as the fight before this. I think that I have to lean with the favorite a little bit because they have the slight edge. But as far as a pure bet goes, I think it is a dog or pass situation. Again, much respect to both fighters, but my pick will be a little bit more towards Almeida, so that's the way I'm going to go.
Both Thomas Almeida and Cody Garbrandt are high-action fighters with big-time power, and both of them do have some durability issues, so there is an extremely high likelihood that this fight ends inside the distance via strikes. Now, Garbrandt was knocked out as an amateur. He was rocked in the Henry Briones fight, so he is definitely going to have to be cautious. I do think his defense is a little bit better than Almeida's, and Almeida has been hurt before he was in the UFC, and then during the UFC, I mean, he got blasted by Brad Pickett, who is not exactly the most powerful bantamweight striker, and was able to come back and pick up one of the best knockouts of the year in that fight. I mean, Almeida is extremely entertaining, high action, high volume, mixes it up with his diversity of strikes extremely well. He is very creative inside the octagon, a lot more creative than Garbrandt. Garbrandt is a little bit more boxing-focused, boxing-centric. And while that does tighten up his defense and his guard, I do think that the fact that Almeida can mix things up a lot more on the feet with his kicks, with his knees, etc., will make Almeida the more dangerous fighter here. That being said, Almeida does get a little too loosey-goosey with his defense. His head movement isn't great, and Pickett was able to pick up on that and really land some heavy shots that hurt him. So if Garbrandt is able to connect with something solid without getting hit, then Garbrandt could pick up the knockout victory. I mean, both of these guys, whoever lands that first really big shot could definitely be the one that wins. In terms of the rest of their games, Garbrandt is probably the better wrestler of the two. And Almeida, I think he mixes in his takedown defense well enough. He's able to get back to his feet, and he is mildly dangerous with submissions. So I expect that even if Garbrandt does mix things up with some takedowns, Almeida will get back, because Garbrandt isn't exactly an elite wrestler in the UFC bantamweight division. So I expect this fight to take place on the feet. I expect it to be high action, but I do think the fact that Almeida can mix things up a little bit better, and Almeida has definitely faced tougher competition so far in his UFC run, will definitely put him over the top here. Garbrandt seems like he's being pushed into this maybe a fight or two too soon, and that could definitely be to his detriment. So I'm going to side with Thomas Almeida, but realistically, the first big shot that either guy lands could be the deciding one. So I'm leaning Thomas Almeida. I'm picking Thomas Almeida, but Cody Garbrandt can definitely win this fight if he lands a big punch. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 88. Part 2 of the Premium Oddscast featuring our premium bets will be out this Saturday following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. Also, if you'd like to become a premium member, just go to MMAOddsbreaker.com and you can sign up in the top right corner of our homepage. If we have a free play to give out for this event, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.